Okay, so there are a couple places you got to go to before you leave here.
Okay.
Because we have authentic Kringle.
This is Lieutenant Dave Walgemuth from the Racine, Wisconsin Police Department. Racine is a city of about 80,000 people sandwiched between Milwaukee and Chicago.
Okay, so Kringle is a pastry that is in like a long, flat donut shape. It's filled with jellies, cherry, pecan, strawberry, blueberry.
Latino USA producer Maggie Freeling is in Lieutenant Wolgamuth's police SUV, and he's taking her to the Racine waterfront of Lake Michigan.
Well, so I hate to tell you, but you really just perpetuated some cop stereotypes talking about donuts.
Oh, I know. Yeah, but I tell you what, firefighters will eat us under the table any day.
But there's a lot more to Wolgamuth's job than comparing Kringles.
Yeah, so you have a bulletproof vest on?
Yeah, I mean, anytime we go out, we need to have gear on, especially with the way things are.
They park at a boat launch and get out of the car. They walk towards the water, cross a bike path, and reach the shore, which is lined with boulders and rubble.
But basically down in here. And it's got to be probably either the hole you're standing over or, you know, one right next to it, which is where he was spotted. So this is the place where the body of Antonio Guerrero was found, right here in the rocks and the breakwaters, right at the 5th Street boat launch.
31-year-old Antonio Guerrero's remains were discovered in November of 2011, right where Maggie and Lieutenant Walgemuth are standing. A man and his son were walking along the rocks when they spotted the body. And at the time, there were very few clues as to who he was.
It was pretty much skeletal remains at that point. When the kid had seen it, he thought it was a skull. But I think the dad initially thought that it was more of like a Halloween decoration or something.
The investigation into who that skeleton belonged to stretched from Racine to Waukesha to Texas and finally back to Illinois. It involved multiple agencies and a lot of dead ends. Ultimately, it wasn't until years later when Puerto Rican native Cristina Figueroa Soto, a forensic anthropologist, came along that the Guerrero family finally got some answers. PR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, what one unidentified body in Wisconsin tells us about the challenges of identifying Latino remains in the U.S. Today's story comes to us from Latino USA producer Maggie Freeling. And Maggie, well, like, seriously, in our office, everybody knows you're like our resident true crime nerd. Like, this is your life.
It's kind of embarrassing, but yes, I am obsessed with true crime. This is my life.
And you've got this particular interest in forensics, which essentially is the science that is used to solve crimes. And in the case of today's story, it's used to identify human remains.
Yes. And so when I came across this story, I got to really dive into the world of forensic science and forensic anthropology. And with that diving in, I did put a microphone inside a human cadaver.
Whoa. Okay. So that means for any of you who are a little bit squeamish, you have been warned.
And so the story I'm going to tell today is about how forensic science helped a family that was dealing with the disappearance of a loved one.
We were always close. Our family, we always lived like in the same house, so we would always see each other every day.
This is Marita Santillan. She's 25 and is Antonio Guerrero's niece. She and her uncle Antonio shared a home with several other family members, all under one roof in Berwyn, Illinois, right outside of Chicago. Antonio Guerrero came to the U.S. from Durango, Mexico, when he was in his 20s. He never learned to speak much English, but his niece Marita said he was a hard worker and built a good life for himself. He worked all kinds of jobs, from construction to factory work.
You name it, he will do it.
Marita remembers him fondly. She says he was married with two kids named Melissa and Luis Antonio, and he was really generous.
Whenever he had money or anything like that, he would love to, you know, invite his friends to go out or us. He would always ask us, you need money? And he wouldn't even think about it twice.
But Antonio had another side, too.
In the beginning, he used to drink, but not too much.
But then the drinking got worse, and it started to worry the family.
He wouldn't even work anymore or anything like that. And if he didn't drink, he would just be like shaking, like, you know, his hand will be shaking.
Marita says every car her uncle had, he ended up crashing. No one in the family understood what was going on with him.
We'd always talk to him, you know, what's going on? What's making you drink this much? Because you never used to be like that. But he never told us what it was.
She says this went on for a few years. Then Antonio and his wife separated, and he continued to spiral.
Sometimes our neighbors, they will call us, you know, oh, we seen your uncle. He was sleeping, you know, in the alley, because obviously he was so drunk that he couldn't make it to the house.
But she says no matter how bad things got with the drinking, one thing was for sure.
No matter how, if he was drunk or anything like that, he would always come home.
Until one day, he didn't.
It was one Monday morning. I remember it was in September 2011. He decided that he was going to go to a rehab center. I remember my grandma saying, are you sure you want to go? And he was saying, yes, I want to get better for me, my kids, and you. And so my grandma started packing his things. And then they came for him in the morning.
Two men came to the house to pick Antonio up. They gave Antonio's mom a business card for the rehab center he was going to. Antonio said goodbye and they left. That was the last time his family saw him. 2 days later, he called home saying he needed them to come get him. He sounded frantic.
It's like, oh, because everything is a trap. They're following me. And he said that he was hiding from them. We honestly didn't like believe him because he used to drink a lot. So we didn't think much of it.
But Marita says the family was still worried enough to drive 3 hours to Racine to get him. They told him, just stay put. Wait at a McDonald's. We're coming. But when they got to Racine, Antonio was nowhere to be found.
We looked everywhere for him. We were asking around.
They went to the rehab center he was supposedly at, and he wasn't there either. Marita says the facility was a come-and-go kind of place, not a live-in program, so he could leave if he wanted to. Staff at the center said Antonio had left, and they didn't know where he went. Marita says they then tried to call the two men that took him to Racine in the first place. They never picked up.
So we started doing posters with his picture, and I will leave my phone number, everything. And we put, you know, have you seen him? We put him around all over the town. You know, it's a very small town. Somebody had to see him, and somebody had to tell us where he was.
Marita says there were a few leads. Someone said they saw him at a homeless shelter. Another man says he took a bus with Antonio to Milwaukee, but nothing panned out. 2 months after Antonio went missing in November 2011, the human remains on Lake Michigan were discovered by the father and son. After Lieutenant Wolgamuth and his crew recovered the remains, the bones of a forearm and hand were also found a few weeks later, about a mile away. Testing revealed it was an adult male in his 20s or 30s, but that was it. At first, officials thought it might be Antonio. So they compared dental records, which is the most common and cost-efficient way to ID remains. But the skeleton had had its wisdom teeth removed, and records showed Antonio Guerrero still had his, so he was ruled out as a match. The forensic information for the remains was entered into NAMIS, the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System, and then the case went cold. There were no more leads. The Guerreros waited and waited for 5 years.
Those years were probably the hardest for my family, myself, because we didn't know if he was alive or dead. Honestly, at the end, we were like, we just want to know what happened to him.
But then finally, a forensic anthropologist takes a second look and everything changes.
Stay with us, no te vayas.
So Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Babbel, a language program that quickly teaches real-life conversations in a new language. Choose from Spanish, French, Italian, German, and more. Babbel's 10 to 15-minute lessons use interactive dialogues and speech recognition technology to get you speaking your new language correctly and confidently. Try Babbel for free by downloading the app or going to Babbel, Babbel.com.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, and on the latest episode of How I Built This, how Stuart Butterfield failed in two companies, pivoted, and then built two amazing new companies, Flickr and Slack. Check out How I Built This wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, we're back. And in September of 2011, Antonio Guerrero went missing in Racine, Wisconsin, hours away from his home near Chicago. His niece, Mereida, says the last time the family spoke with him, Antonio was acting strange, and they were worried. 2 months later, skeletal remains were found on the shoreline in the same town where Antonio went missing. But dental records had ruled him out from being a match. Latino USA producer Maggie Freeling takes it from here.
4 years after Antonio went missing, there were still no answers. But then, Cristina Figueroa Soto took on the case.
I was hired in 2015, and then one of my roles is to start looking into the cold cases and trying to see if I can help and provide any new information. So Antonio's case was the first one that I received.
Cristina was hired by the medical examiner's office that had the Lake Michigan remains. The office is about an hour away from Racine. Cristina is 32. She's a native of Puerto Rico and a forensic anthropologist, basically someone who studies human skeletal remains. I met Cristina at the Waukesha County Medical Examiner's Office. And as soon as I walked in, I noticed something.
We only have one man working here.
I notice it's all women.
Is that normal?
Well, it's becoming the face of the field.
This is Dr. Linda Biedrzycki, or Dr. B. She's the medical examiner who hired Cristina. And she's right. Women make up at least 70% of forensic graduates in the United States. Compare that to the STEM workforce or science, tech, engineering, and math as a whole, where women make up only 24%. One expert I talked to says this is particularly because the rise in popularity of shows that feature forensic scientists, like NCIS, CSI, and Bones. A lot of the main characters are women.
I'm a forensic anthropologist. I know how to say skull in just about every language.
Let me tell you something, lady. If you don't care about catching the suspect, neither do we.
You do realize you can kill me without leaving any forensic evidence behind? Yeah. You mentioned that. Good then.
But Cristina doesn't even watch those shows.
I used to. Yeah, I used to when I was in high school. Not anymore. I can't. I don't know. It's just... It's funny. It's like, I can't watch Bones.
She says she actually got into forensics because...
You know, at the end of the day, I can identify someone and I can bring closure to someone.
But to work in this field, you also have to have a really, really strong stomach. When I entered the autopsy suite, there was an organ donation going on. Okay, that cracking, that's a woman breaking ribs to remove a breastplate. I talked with one of the assistants as this was happening.
I don't know how well. We just had a taco party this week. Mm-hmm. It takes a certain kind of person to do either of these jobs.
And Christina's one of those people. She shows me to a table on the other side of the room with a few bones on it.
So can you tell me what bones we're looking at here?
So we have a scapula.
Okay, what's a scapula?
This is, what do you call it? Your
like a shoulder blade?
Yeah, your shoulder blade.
So using these recently identified remains, Cristina shows me how forensic anthropology comes into play in cases where the person is skeletonized after the body is decomposed and only the skeleton is left.
This is definitely not a young individual. And you can see here, this is a little bit of degenerate joint disease.
And this is how Cristina was basically able to determine who Antonio was. by looking at his bones.
Once I estimated the biological profile, we kind of got a sense that maybe this individual was most likely similar to individuals of what we call Hispanic background.
Okay, so part of how Christina IDs bodies is by figuring out what ethnicity they belong to. And she can actually do this by looking at bones. People with similar ancestry tend to have similar bone characteristics. It's the kind of thing the average person would never notice, but a forensic anthropologist is trained to see. Hispanic, as a category, of course, includes people from many different backgrounds and places. But there are enough similarities in heritage that Christina can ID bones as belonging to a Hispanic or Latino person with a pretty good degree of certainty. And if she can look at a skeleton and say, well, this person was white or black or Asian or Hispanic, it helps narrow down who it could be. So in Antonio's case,
we didn't have somebody that had the experience with Hispanic individuals, so I was able to recognize several features, and I was able to kind of lead in that direction.
As it turns out, the remains of people with Latin American origins are more difficult to ID in the U.S. because of the reference sample collection.
So reference samples, they're just pretty much a collection of skeletal remains, right?
Forensic anthropologists basically compare remains, like the Lake Michigan ones, against these samples to figure out who they might have belonged to. But Christina says the collections we have are really outdated. They come from body donations that are mostly from the 19th and mid-20th century. And that means they're not representative of the population today. They're mostly white and Anglo, some black, but not very Latino.
So we don't have right now a good set of reference samples or skeletal collections that are representative of these individuals.
And Christina's trying to fix this problem. She has a grant to travel to Mexico and Puerto Rico to collect new bone samples and bring them back to the U.S.
so that we can have enough information for individuals here in the medical examiner's office and other forensic anthropologists across the country that can utilize all of this information and all of this data.
When Christina was hired in 2015 at the Waukesha Medical Examiner's Office, one of the first things she did was take a look at all the cold cases on file. And the first one she picked was Antonio's.
I'm not going to lie, on the Antonio case, when I found that match, I was so excited. I remember that day. I was looking through NAMIS, and I'm calling Dr. B, and I'm like, hey, I think I found a match. This is him. Maybe we can ID him. From there, it took off, and I can show you everything that we have.
We pack up the bones, leave the autopsy suite.
You want me to leave her out?
And walk upstairs to Christina's office to see Antonio's case file.
So this is Antonio's case. See him?
How did they see that?
I don't know. Yeah, so it was amazing that they found him. Amazing.
We're looking at photos from the day the remains were found, wedged in the rocks on the shore at Lake Michigan. The bones were compact and barely visible.
And then my analysis.
Christina says the body was most similar to a Hispanic individual. Once she figured this out, she went to NAMIS and saw that a Hispanic man named Antonio Guerrero was missing in Racine, where the remains were found. His family was contacted for a DNA sample for comparison, and it was a match. The Racine County remains belonged to Antonio Guerrero. Now, if you remember, Antonio was previously eliminated as a match based on dental records. But as it turned out, Antonio did have his wisdom teeth removed. His dental records were just out of date. Almost 5 years later, the Guerreros finally got some answers. Mareta says there's finally closure in knowing where her uncle is.
I'm very grateful for the person that discovered it was my uncle, because she brought us peace to my family, knowing that we don't have to look for him anymore.
But they still don't know for sure how he died. The medical examiner and Christina could not find any signs of trauma to the body, so Antonio's death was ruled undetermined. But the Guerreros think they know what happened. They believe that the two men who picked him up to go to rehab had something to do with it, that Antonio might have gotten mixed up in something illegal.
Nobody could change our mind on that. We know for a fact it was because of that.
I asked the Racine police if they spoke to the two men Antonio was last seen with. They told me they're not allowed to comment because it's still an open investigation. Thanks to forensic science, his family can finally stop looking. Although they don't know what exactly happened, they do at least know for sure that Antonio is no longer alive. Antonio's body was ID'd in 2016. Moreira wanted to thank the person responsible, but she never had the chance. So when I met with Christina at her office in Wisconsin, we gave Moreira a call.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Since you were like the last person that kind of seen my uncle, you know, yeah. I don't know why. I just had the need that I needed to talk to you. We couldn't thank you enough. Something very amazing, you know. Honestly, my respect to you.
You know, that's the reason why I'm in this field, is to help you guys and help families like you. So,
well, thank you so much for hearing my call. You know, thank you. Bye-bye.
Oh, that makes me happy and sad at the same time.
And as Christina helps the National Databank of Bone Samples to grow, perhaps in the future, families won't have to wait quite so long for answers.
Our thanks to Latino USA producer Maggie Freeling for that story. And if you have any information regarding the death of Antonio Guerrero, you can contact Deputy Chief Schultz of the Racine Police Department at 262-635-7759. This episode was reported and produced by Maggie Freeling and edited by Annie Aviles. Latino USA is produced by Miguel Macias, Antonia Cerejido, Andres Caballero, Janice Yamoka, Sayer Quevedo, with help from Fernanda Chavarri. We're edited by Marlon Bishop and Sofia Paliza Carr. Our engineers are Ginny Montalvo and Stephanie LeBeau. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our fellows are Virginia Lora and Jesse Alejandro Cottrell. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Ruinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, be sure to stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media, and I'll see you there. Ciao!
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Annie E. Casey Foundation creates a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. And funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
I'm Latino USA.
You're not Latino USA.
I'm so not. From NPR and Futuro Media, I'm Latino... What the... I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, the aftermath of the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy and the separated families who paid the heavy price.
So the baby is brought up in front of the judge. He kind of looked at him and said, you know, I'm embarrassed to even ask this. Can a one-year-old learn immigration law?
That's next time on Latino USA. I want to tell you about something super exciting that's coming up, because this year Latino USA turns 25 years old, and we want to invite you to our birthday party. On Sunday, August 12th, we're teaming up with City Park Summer Stage to celebrate with Grammy winner Jerry Rivera, New Yorican poet La Bruja,
even if you ain't Boricua, can I call you my peeps,
and famed percussionist Chembo Corniel. So come out, dance and party with the Latino USA team in New York City's East River Park for free as we all get together to celebrate this important anniversary. I hope I'll see you there.
I'm Ann Powers from NPR Music. Last summer, we launched Turning the Tables, a project that radically changed how we talk about the history of popular music, with a list of the 150 greatest albums by women. This week, we're launching Season 2, looking at the 200 greatest songs by 21st century women. Check out who made the list and who didn't at npr.org/turningthetables.